This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome to the Portuguese American Hour. I am Justice Neves here with Dennis Borges, as always, in our new year.
That's right. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year again. We keep on wishing you Happy New Year. I hope everyone does have a great new year.
It'll last at least the first couple weeks.
That's right. We need to do that. Remind everyone that we are the new year and get rid of all your old vices and start new ones, right?
Exactly.
Well, here we are with the show dedicated to the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at CSU Fresno, at California State University Fresno. We're going to have also our moment in Portuguese history today. We'll have also a recipe of the week, and we'll talk about a book as well. And some music. How's that?
Yeah, music's always great.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some Portuguese community events as well. So I think maybe we want to start with our first song. How's that?
Yeah, let's get started with some music.
Fado music is something that we've been kind of featuring here. We just had a show, which, by the way, thanks to the different people who were very nice to send me a message through social media, and some folks also through personal messages, enjoyed, as well as people telling us that they enjoyed the show that we dedicated to Amália Rodrigues, hearing about her story and actually listening to four or five of her songs. So we need to do that. We need to feature an artist more often here on the Portuguese American Hour.
Yeah, definitely.
So today on the Portuguese American Hour, we're going to go back to Fado, but not Amália, but it's actually a group of three fadistas. Fado has also, besides being the urban folk song that we've explained here in the Portuguese American Hour before, it is also a song that's been adapted through various parts of mainland Portugal and the Azores. But in mainland Portugal, there's also a kind of a sub-genre of fado that is tied to the pastures, to the bullfights, to the bull rings, to the raising of cattle. Sometimes it's called kind of a fado Marialva. And that's the kind of fado we're going to listen to today. So a little bit from a different part of Portugal, a little bit more dedicated to the rural parts and not the urban setting. And the first song is actually called Fado do Ribatejo. Ribatejo is one of the regions in Portugal that has an interior area well known for its agriculture and also well known for raising bulls, for bullfights, and also for raising cattle as well. So let's listen to our first song, Fado do Ribatejo.
Já não percorro contente os campos da minha terra, já não me aquece a luz quente das tardes de Salvaterra. Fugiu-me o sol da aventura, o céu a minha ilusão, e a voz de Deus noite escura caiu no meu coração. Oh, Ribatejo, pai do meu Tejo, já te não vejo sempre a cantar. Hoje horizontes, prados e montes, rios e fontes sinto a chorar. Toda a beleza da natureza acho tristeza, desolação. Como acho negro destino, porque um campino está na prisão. Vivendo a rir mal sabia que o riso é primo da mágoa, e tinha a santa alegria da gente da borda d'água. Amor de mãe estremecida já me ensinara o prazer, foi já na escola da vida que eu aprendi a sofrer. Oh, Ribatejo, pai do meu tejo, já te não vejo sempre a cantar. Hoje horizontes, prados e montes, rios e fontes, sinto a chorar. Toda a beleza da natureza, acho tristeza, desolação. Como acho negro destino, porque um campino está na prisão. Toda a beleza da natureza, acho tristeza, desolação. Como acho negro destino, porque um campino está na prisão.
And that was our first musical presentation for today in the Portuguese American Hour. We are happy to have all of you with us. Remember that the Portuguese American Hour is a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. And we have our guest. We always try to have at least one guest every single show. Today we have a guest on the line all the way from Northern California. We are happy to have her. She's an outstanding young lady who has been involved in lots of different things in the Portuguese and the Macaense community throughout many years here in the state of California. She's a good friend, Maria Ruiz. Thank you so much for taking time to visit with us, Maria.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Boas festas.
Boas festas to you too. And let's begin, if you don't mind, describing to our audience a little bit of your involvement. Your involvement because of the territory of Macau, which is now part of China, but for quite a few centuries it was an overseas province of Portugal. And you've been very involved, of course, with the Macaense community in Northern California, but also involved heavily, as I mentioned, with the Portuguese American community, whether it be with some of the organizations like Luso American Education Foundation, like being on the advisory board of the General Consul of Portugal in San Francisco, and many, many other Portuguese American organizations that you've contributed immensely to. So first of all and foremost, thank you so much for all you do. And second, describe to our audience, if you don't mind, a little bit of the Macaense experience here in Northern California. There's a couple of areas that there is a very strong community that originated in Macau, correct?
Correct. So I would say we have at least 10,000 people of Macaense origin in California. And we actually have three Macaense clubs in the Bay Area, one being Casa de Macau USA, UMA Inc., and Lusitano Club of California, which I'm heavily involved in for the last 35 years.
For a while.
So basically our club, the Lusitano Club, is a nonprofit, and our mission is to preserve the history, culture, and heritage of the descendants of Portuguese people of the Far East known as the Macaenses, and also to establish and reinforce a bond between the Portuguese Macaenese people and the descendants of Portuguese people from other cultural backgrounds, and to educate our members of its history, language, literature, art, music, and so forth. So that's one of the reasons that we actually interact and work with a lot of different Luso-American Portuguese organizations in the Bay Area.
Right, and the Lusitano Club, as you said, you've been involved in it for 35 years, for quite a while. Tell us about some of the activities at the Lusitano Club. First of all, where it's located and some of the activities that the Lusitano Club does throughout their calendar year.
So our office is actually, we're all volunteers. So our office is actually in downtown San Francisco. They use my office. But we also own a building, one-third of a building, the Macau Cultural Center in Fremont. And we actually have events all over San Francisco, San Mateo, Fremont, depending on what the activities are. So we have cooking classes, Portuguese classes. We do a Dia de Portugal festival each year at the Portuguese Historic Museum Park. And we've been doing that for the last 23 years. We have different events catered to the families, picnics, mm-hmm. Christmas parties. In fact, we just had our Christmas party a few weeks ago for about 300 of our members.
Wow.
And every 3 years, we also have a gathering of all the Macanese diaspora back to Macau.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened just last month.
Correct.
That we went.
And you you were able to take a rather large group of folks who are of Macanese origin, or also people who are of Portuguese ancestry or Luso-Brazilian, that were part of this delegation from California. Tell us a little bit about that. It was a rather large delegation.
Yes, so we had 240 of our members.
Wow.
That went, and it was a one-week encontro in Macau where mm-hmm. we met up with 1,500 other members from around the world, Brazil, Canada, Australia, Portugal, United Kingdom, and Hong Kong, to this event that happens every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really great event where there were like cultural activities, different seminars talking about Macau, the history,
mm-hmm.
and we had a lot of social events too, and tours, and a lot of more information about the current Macau and old Macau.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people were really impressed to mm-hmm. see that now that even it's taken over by China, it's still being ruled as one country with two systems,
mm-hmm.
with still a lot of Portuguese influence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so for those of us in the San Joaquin Valley who are of Portuguese background, and especially those of us who, like myself, who immigrated, we, of course, learned a little bit about Macau in school in Portugal. But Macau has, as you mentioned, this double culture. There is, of course, the very strong Chinese culture, but there is also the presence of the Portuguese culture, even after Portugal left quite a few years ago.
Yeah. So basically, back in 1557, you know, over 400 and close to 470 years ago,
mm-hmm.
the Portuguese did a lot of trades, and there were a lot of pirates in Asia. So the Chinese were really impressed with the efficiency of the Portuguese when they displayed in dealing with the pirates.
Mm-hmm.
So they insisted that the Portuguese establish a post in Macau. And from then on, Macau became a Portuguese colony for 442 years until the handover back to China due to their agreement
mm-hmm.
back on December 20th, 1999.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, now it's 20 years. We just celebrated on December 20th, the 20th anniversary of the Macau Special Administrative
mm-hmm.
Region.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that they have not really, they have kept the promise where, you know, they really are ruling the place as one country, two systems.
Mm-hmm.
And their languages right now, it's Portuguese and Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. So it's Portuguese is still somewhat spoken in Macau, Maria?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And in fact, you'll see a lot of the street signs with the Portuguese signs still there.
Mm-hmm.
And certain areas, you'll feel like you are actually in Portugal because of all the cobblestones and the architect.
What is the population of Macau, more or less, and what is basically it lives from tourism, or is there other industries?
I'm not quite sure about the population, but mm-hmm. it's a lot is from tourism, and the main thing is casino. The
okay.
industry
right.
is bigger than Las Vegas.
Oh.
Their income is seven times more than what you make in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yes.
So a rather large industry, yes, if
yeah.
it's seven times. We think of Vegas as the world.
it doesn't
compare to Macau.
Not at all.
That's amazing. And so how was, this delegation that she went to? As you mentioned, there were lots of different activities throughout this event that you put forth that you're part of every 3 years. How did folks who I saw the pictures, obviously on social media, lots of them are my friends and people I know. I was kind of bummed out because I couldn't attend because of my commitments at Fresno State. How did the folks who went there for the first time, what were some of their impressions that they shared with you?
I think they were really impressed and did not expect to see what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
that there was still so much Portuguese influence,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the streets and all the Portuguese restaurants and people speaking Portuguese,
mm-hmm.
I think they were quite surprised with that. And just with the diversity,
mm-hmm.
and all the industry, especially the casinos.
Correct.
And all the sites.
And so this tie with Portugal, even after, of course, Macau is now incorporated into mainland China, do you, with all your experience, do you foresee that these ties will continue?
We hope so. I think they will. It is beneficial to them because it makes it more unique,
mm-hmm.
than if it was all become back to China.
Correct. And
so, when people come to Macau, they can see the difference, the uniqueness of it, because of still the Portuguese influence in it.
So it has that double influence. I mean, it has that,
yes.
double. You kind of have a taste of two different cultures in one place.
Exactly.
Okay. The community here, the Macaeans community here, is basically, you said, more or less around 10,000 in the state of California. Is it mostly in the Bay Area?
They're pretty much spread out.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but I would say at least half of them in the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area. And these communities, other than Lusitano Club, do these other associations also keep in contact with the Portuguese-American community, which is also rather large in the Bay Area?
Some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
So each of these three clubs I mentioned, we have three Macanese clubs in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them kind of do a little bit different stuff, but the main mission, all of them, mm-hmm. is to preserve our history, culture, and heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that we are more of the active club, the Lusitano Club,
mm-hmm.
that reach out to all the different Portuguese organizations since our initiation. Yeah.
Right. And what made you get involved? I've known you for a few years, not 35 years, but I've known you for a few years. What made you get involved in the Portuguese-American community in the Bay Area?
Well, my father, he's very, definitely very patriotic,
uh-huh.
and passionate about his Portuguese heritage. And growing up, I went to a Portuguese school in Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
and we had a lot of Portuguese customs, mm-hmm. and influence, and there were actually two Portuguese clubs in, mm-hmm. Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
where I grew up. And he was very involved, and I used to attend these activities as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So when we immigrated to the States,
mm-hmm.
We kind of continued. It was really for the older people. They didn't have anything for the kids because,
mm-hmm.
we were a lot younger, 10, 12 years old. But then I knew that we had to continue something because we had so much fun back in Hong Kong with the clubs. And we had a lot of friends of Portuguese origin. So when this Lusitano Club, which actually started in 1984 with a lot of my friends that started as a hockey team,
hmm.
sports club. So that's when I got involved, since it was all of the, teenagers and so forth. And we continued on from there. So,
well,
from back then, I guess we had a handful of people from a hockey team. But right now, we have over 1,000 members.
Wow, fantastic. Wow, imagine. Tremendous growth. Well, Maria, thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. I hope that someday and soon we can have you here at Fresno State and hopefully make a presentation to our students and our community about your involvement, about the Macaeans community, and about Macau in general, because it's kind of, to many people in the Portuguese-American community, it's something that they've heard of. We were raised with hearing about Macau, but some of us know very little about it. So thank you so much for all you do, and thank you for all of your work on behalf of everything that's Luso and Portuguese in the Bay Area. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we'll be in touch. And bom ano novo. Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
So that is Maria Holis, as you have heard, Justice. Quite interesting lady. She is with the Lusitano Club, one of the Macaeans, which is Macau is a region in right next to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
It was Portuguese, as she mentioned, for, almost 500 years or
I
around 500 years.
No idea.
Yeah, the Portuguese use it as a trade post. and as a way into China. But the people have kept their contact with Portugal. As she mentioned, the streets still have names in Portuguese. Mm-hmm. There's still Portuguese being taught in schools. Some of the documents are in both languages. And there are about, which that surprised me, I didn't know, there are about 10,000 Macaenses, people who are from Macau or whose families originated from Macau here in the state of California, which is a rather large percentage. Such a small area that Macau is. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating city. I've seen all kinds of pictures. My friends were nice enough to post them all on Facebook and all the different social media so I could sob because I was supposed to go on the trip. I had planned to go on the trip. Uh-huh. But I had to do this little job called teaching.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't go because it was a long period of time. Anyway, thank you, Maria, for Jalice. She is an outstanding young lady. She has done tremendous work with the Macaense community, but also she's done a tremendous work in bringing together the Portuguese and the Macaense communities together in different projects throughout the state and throughout the year. Mm-hmm. So we're glad we had her here, and hopefully she'll be our guest at one of our lectures very soon here at the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University of Fresno, because I think it'd be worthwhile for students and the community in general to learn a little bit more about Macau and its role with the Portuguese.
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting connection there. Like I said, I had no idea that was a...
Yeah, that even existed. Yeah, a lot of people don't. We had a very strong presence in Asia. There are over 700 words in the Japanese, not the Chinese, I don't know. But in the Japanese language, there's been studies that we have over 700 words in the Japanese language that are of Portuguese background.
Wow.
Like, for example, we say obrigado, Japanese is arigato. So there's lots of similarities. Anyway, we'll be talking about that in the future. I think it's time for us to go to our first break, and we'll be right back with our second segment of the Portuguese American Hour here on KGST Multicultural 1600 AM.
Stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM. Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Thank you for tuning in. And now we are back here with our second guest.
Yes, Happy New Year to everybody. And our second guest, we are fortunate to have a second guest today on the show and fortunate to have him. He's retired, but he's a pretty busy guy. He was a school administrator for many years. He was a teacher as well. He was a professor of Portuguese as well. His name is Eduardo Eusebio. He is the current chair of the board of the Luso-American Education Foundation. He is also on the board of the Luso Life, the Luso Financial, which is the insurance and the... economic package, let's put it that way, products of the Luso family. I've known Eduardo Eusebio for a very long time, probably longer than him and I care to admit. But we have known each other for a long time when I was a young and naive. Not that I'm any less naive today, but I'm certainly less young, not as young. When I was a young and naive radio Portuguese radio host, and I used to cover the Luso American Education Foundation conferences when Eduardo, for many and many years, was the chairperson, not just the chairperson, he was the soul and body and brains of the Luso American Education Foundation. Eduardo, thank you for taking the time to be with us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Professor Diniz, and good afternoon, and thank you for those words. People lie, but you can always lie about good things.
I don't lie. I try not to lie, first of all. Like, we all lie a little bit, but this is the absolute truth, and I'm not going to go over your resume because it would take me the whole 20 minutes that we're allowed to talk. But it is very impressive, and I don't have to mention it because people know that. And for folks to know that, Eduardo and I don't always agree, but I have the utmost respect for the community service that this young man has given throughout the last 4 or 5 decades, at least, to this community. So, Eduardo, let's talk a little bit about Luso American Education Foundation. For many years, if you recall how many, I don't know exactly, but for many years, you actually chaired the conference. Now the conference went from community to community, but you were basically, as I mentioned, the brain, the soul, and the body behind the Luso American Education Foundation Conference. What made you get into that wholeheartedly like you did?
Well, actually, you mentioned 50 years, and it was precisely 1963 when the foundation was formed, and I have been with it for 50 years, of course, not right from the beginning, but shortly mm-hmm. after. You mentioned the Portuguese Conference in Education, which is was started in 1976 in San Diego. And I believe you came aboard shortly after that, maybe 3 or 4 years later.
Yeah. My first one was in 1980, yes.
80, so I was going to say late 70s, 1980. And I was the chairman for 19 straight conferences, that's true. We used to have a state chairman that put this conference together, which was a little different from today, as you know. And the intent at the time was these were the golden years of bilingual education, and we have two major goals. One was to provide teachers with the best practices in the classroom in dealing with the education of bilingual students, and in particularly Portuguese bilingual students. The majority, of course, were Azorean immigrants that came with their parents. These were also the golden ages of the immigration from Portugal, in particular the Azores, and of course that's not the case anymore. So we had our first intent was precisely to bring together the teachers into a common area group, and with the participation of the State Department of Education, we owe a lot of a debt really to the at that time in mm-hmm. a bilingual area, and as you'll recall, the people that came, David Dolson was one of them. So the other intent was also to prepare teachers, to inspire people that were not teachers, and may I be seen as presumptuous and say maybe you were one of them that came in and looked at it, got interested, and became a teacher of Portuguese. I may say that myself, I was not teaching Portuguese at the time. I was doing French and Spanish, of all things, and I was a counselor, and as you mentioned, then as an administrator. However, I kept my foot in the classroom by teaching Portuguese at the college level, as a junior college, as community college in particular. So that was the conference on the foundation. I can talk here for hours, but I don't know how much time we have.
No, we keep on talking. But, you know, one of the things that I've always appreciated, yes. and those people, probably folks who know Eduardo Zeb, you know this, many of in our listening audience probably don't know him, but Eduardo is not from the Azores. He's mentioned the Azores like 3 or 4 times already. And one of the things yes. that I've always admired is your practical ways of looking at things, because being from mainland Portugal, from southern Portugal, correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. And
from Algarve, that's right.
Let's give it a plug.
Let's give it a plug, yes. And you spend time there, which is great.
I do.
But not being from the Azores, you early on with the conferences, you established some protocols and some agreements, and I don't remember a time that you, in the 19 years that you did it, that there was always, I should say, a representation from the government of the Azores. You established this early on, and you had quite a bit of a connection. So these things that happened today were established in your time.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. We had representatives of the Azores all the time. The government of the Azores was very good at realizing that there was a need, and they wanted their native children to have a good education. We always said that education knows no languages. Math, science, history, whatever, can be taught in any language and learned in any language. I should probably state that I also have a background of working with migrant children, particularly from Mexico. And therefore, we were looking at where they're coming from. And the Portuguese immigrants were coming from, obviously, the Azores. And they had their own microculture, if you will, even from island to island, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to address all of that with some or less success, we don't know. But I think it was important that we have that. And the psychosocial adjustment and the schooling of the migrant child, no matter where it's coming from, it follows the same process. It has the same ups and downs. The families are have something in common, you know, whether the parents didn't speak any language at all. And now the children did, and as you know, usually you know this, the children become the head of the family in a migrant, the immigrant family. And we were aware of that. That we want to make sure that the parents were prepared for that giving up being the head of the family and having the child as the head of the family. I don't want to go too much into this, into all of the details, but those are the things that concerned us, the education, make sure that they were appropriately in the right classes, that they were not at the whim of the counselors later on in high school and be sent to a shop class. There's nothing wrong with a shop class, but maybe they needed an advanced math and rigorous curriculum to go to college instead of,
instead of
a better paying job.
Instead of just doing your time to pass. One question in regards to the conference, because I think the conference is an important part of the Luso American Education Foundation. It's not the only thing. The Luso American Education Foundation, there's many things, and we'll talk about those. But the conference, Eduardo, has changed. As you mentioned, there's no longer the need for bilingual education. Immigration has ceased from mainland Portugal and from the Azores basically in the last 30 years. And so the community is much, much integrated, which is a good thing. And now we're kind of at a different crossroads. How do you see the conferences moving forward? You've had all the experience of those 19 years. You've seen in the last, you know, few years that you've been a chair, and even before you were chair, you've seen the conferences, you know, at a distance and a little bit more hands-on for those 19 years, and now a little bit more hands-on since you've been back in the foundation as a chairperson of the foundation. Yeah. How do you see them moving forward in your thoughts on that?
Well, to begin with, we should always have this conference for nothing else and for no other reason as a way to bring teachers, administrators, community together at least once a year. We have problems that we need to address together. We have challenges that we need to address together. And of course, we have a future that we need to look at together and be prepared for. For no other reason, that should continue. I still think it is an element of what's best for the community. And yeah, the changes, you know, I know that if you go from San Diego to Tulare to Fresno to up north, the communities have different needs. And only coming together can we understand what those needs are, I should say. I know, as you know, the inspiration of teaching language and culture needs to be promoted, and the best methods have to be discussed at these conferences. It's no longer a conference of bilingual educators, because bilingual education pretty much, you know, is not existent, except in a few schools that you can mention, and better than I know, as you were closer to that than I am. But so that's at least one of the reasons to continue with the conference.
Yeah,
and I know this year is going to be in Fresno.
Yes, October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd,
2020.
Yes, yeah, 2020, this year, October 1st, 20 yes. and 3rd. October yes. 1st, 2nd, and 3rd will be the yes. conference in Fresno, so people here at Fresno State and the surrounding community, so do mark on your calendar. I believe that well, now...
Let me
please do.
Before you continue. And as you know, there's a strategic plan to teaching Portuguese in California, which can be adapted to any place in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And if, again, this is another reason why I should have those conferences, to bring this together for people to be aware that there is a strategic plan, what it is, how it is, and how it works. So that's just another reason for the conference. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that even in the – and the conference has done this, as you've known in the last few years especially, which is besides the academic part, there is that connection with the community, which is very important, which you did in your years because when you were putting together and had all the teachers, it was always a community component.
Always.
Yeah.
Yes, we have that.
That is an important component. Let's. We have a few minutes. We need to go to a break, and then we'll be back with you. But before we go to a break, tell me a little bit about some of the things. One of the things that the Louisville American Education Foundation does is actually give scholarships. That's probably the main reason it began, Eduardo. I don't know the exact history, but that's. Would you say that's mainly the reason how the conference, how the foundation got formed?
That's exactly how it was formed. It was in 1957, a group of people start talking about giving scholarships, again, to prepare teachers to teach Portuguese. So from that group, in 1963, they actually formed the foundation, the Louisville American Education Foundation. And it was in 1959, if my dates are correct, the group at the time, I wasn't even in the United States at that time, they sponsored a teacher, Professor Arthur Askins, that was the very first person to receive a scholarship to learn Portuguese in Portugal. And there was only Açores at the time, it was in Coimbra that he went to. And then he came back. He became a teacher of Portuguese, and actually became a teacher at Berkeley. Now, from there, of course, it developed, and now we give scholarships to a lot of students. We have awarded, since 1963 to the present time, close to $2 million in scholarships.
Wow.
And these are funds that are gotten together in the Portuguese way, you know, eating yourself into getting fundraisers, dinners, dances. We have the contest of the Louisville American Fraternal Federation, where the queen gets to be crowned queen if she brings the biggest amount of money for scholarships, and that has been a big one. We have years of getting 50,000, 60,000. It depends where the queen is from. And how many rushes are around there, you know, around there. But we have now individuals that upon their death they donate in their will money to the foundation for scholarships. We have scholarships that are targeted to individual families with their name. In any way, to make it a long story short. Last year alone, we have about 90,000 scholarships and about $90,000, about 1,000 per student. The minimum scholarship now is $500, and we have scholarships that go up to 4,000.
We're talking with Eduardo. Yeah, we're talking with Eduardo Eusebio, who is the chairman of the board of the Louisville American Education Foundation, here on the Portuguese American Hour on KGST AM 1600, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. We'll be right back, and we'll continue talking to Eduardo Eusebio right after this short break.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Thank you for staying tuned with us, or if you're just joining us, welcome.
That's right. Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And we are continuing our conversation with Professor Eduardo Eusébio, emeritus. He is retired, who is the chairman of the board of the Luso-American Education Foundation. We spoke in detail about the foundation. As he mentioned, he coordinated the annual conference. This year will be in Fresno. This year of 2020 will be in Fresno on October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the university and also at the Selma Portuguese Hall, so the Fresno area. And we will, he coordinated the conference for 19 years, no small task. So for almost half of the existence of this conference, it was coordinated by Eduardo Eusébio. But Eduardo, as I mentioned, is not from one of the few people in California, not from the Azores, but he should be honored by the Azorean government. Actually, that's a very good idea. I got to talk to him. I had a great idea. So Eduardo Eusébio has done a lot for the Azorean community, for the Portuguese community in general, for communities of Portuguese-speaking countries, whether they're from Portugal, Brazil, or Portuguese countries in Africa. But he has done a lot for the community, although the community, as we all know, is about 97% of Azorean descent. And he's been able to have a very strong relationship with the Azorean government, including in many years past with a gentleman who we all had dealings with, which was Professor Duarte Mendes, who for many years was director of Azorean communities. Eduardo, as an immigrant, let's talk a little bit, just a few minutes about your personal story. So, you immigrated to the United States as a young man. What drove you to this country, and why did you stay?
Yeah. The question at the time was, why did I stay? Didn't even come to mind. Today, I guess we do wonder. But by the way, let me go back here a little bit, because I've been honored by the government of the Azores, and they have been very good to be.
Oh, okay. Well, then, one more honor, then, maybe.
Yeah, yes. I've also been honored by the government of Portugal. But
that I know. That I know, yes.
We never do these things to get honored. We do these things because it's in our heart. And those that try to do stuff to get honored usually don't not get honored. Anyway, let me... why did I come? It's very simple. The 1960, well, everyone wanted to go to the United States, right? So mm-hmm. In 1963, that was an alternative to not being able to go to college in Portugal or the university. Mm-hmm. University studies are, as you know, practically free in Portugal, but there was moving to, I was from a small town, I had to go to Coimbra or Lisboa because there was nothing really in the province, as we call it at the time. And the alternative was to come to the United States. And I had an uncle of my mother that lived here. But interestingly enough, I was supposed to go to Fresno. You didn't know that. Mm. There was a gentleman that made a connection with a high school in Fresno. Don't ask me which one. Where they would accept students. Like on a foreign student exchange type of thing. Mm. That's how I ended up. But instead of going to Fresno, as it was predicted, a friend of mine went to Fresno from the same town, and I ended up in Fortuna in Northern California, over there in the Redwoods, because that's where my uncle, again, my mother's uncle, I called him uncle, resided. And I went there for a year. I was already 19. I had finished high school pretty much in Portugal with the Setim 1, you know, or whatever it is today. Well, the education thing has changed. Mm-hmm. So then they said, you shouldn't be here. You should be in college. And I went to Humboldt State and then UC Davis. And this was my education and travel. I majored in French because that's what I was doing at the time. Spanish and then counseling and education administration. As you know, I taught also for Chapman University at the time that you were working on your credentials.
That's right. That's right.
But I wasn't here in Northern California, and you were down in the Fresno. who never had an opportunity to have you as a student. That's unfortunate.
That was unfortunate for me not to have you as a teacher as well. maybe you'd have been easy on me.
Probably.
Let's talk a little bit about Portugal itself to end our conversation. I know that you go there quite often, usually once or twice a year at least. Now it's a little bit easier because we have a direct flight from San Francisco to Lisboa, to Lisbon, so it's kind of really convenient. I know you've taken advantage of that situation. How do you see Portugal now? And of course, it's not a very fair comparison to 40 years ago, but let's just say, how do you see Portugal now compared to even 15 years ago or so?
Well, Portugal is getting more and more modernized. It's a lot. First of all, it's easier to it's accessible. Like you said, in particular, with the direct flight from Lisbon to San Francisco, Lisbon. But I just did that about a month ago, and I see the planes are not full. So I don't know if this is you're going to be able to continue that route.
Hmm.
Portugal has really come along really fast. The question that we have is, do we have a stable, strong economy to maintain what the people want and desire? Everybody wants a great education, good social services in health and welfare. Everybody wants transportation, everything. But the question that I see is sometimes the people there don't understand that to give in one area, you have to take from another. And no one wants to be taken, if that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that it's sustainable, the level, which is a good level. We don't want to go back to 50, 60 years ago in any way, shape, or form. But people have, I think, like they say, here we eat to live, and in Portugal they live to eat. In other words, they like the good times, and I think Portugal has become a little bit of the northern countries. They kind of fun of us that we just want to have a good time and not work hard enough, unless we are becoming immigrants, and then it's the other way around. We are the best working people in the world. But anyway, like I said, you mentioned I went to Portugal 3 times last year.
Mm-hmm.
I intend to do the same thing this year. I tried to go in the spring, summer, and fall. The question is, why don't I stay there? And I go back and forth. Well, this is the dilemma of the immigrant. I don't know if I'm considered anymore an immigrant, but I am. I've been here for 56 years now. It's a long time. But we have family. We have roots over here that is as deep as they are there.
Right.
I still have some.
Your daughters are both here, correct?
My daughters are both here, but I can say that my daughters are all Portuguese citizens now.
Mm-hmm.
My two of my four grandchildren have received their citizenship as of last week, and I have two more that have initiated the process of being a Portuguese citizen, and one of my son-in-laws is also already a Portuguese citizen. So we're almost 100%, even though only two of the 10 of us were born in Portugal, the other ones are quickly becoming Portuguese citizens, and they're very proud of that. So, and that is something that goes back to our work that you have done, and that I did, and others have done, and that is make us proud of who we are, and of our heritage, even if you're born over here. I'm not surprised that my daughters and my grandchildren wanted to be citizens of Portugal, but my sons-in-law, those I was a little surprised. And I said, why not? And who knows, maybe we want to go back and immigrate to Portugal. I don't think that's going to happen. But
But it's good to be a citizen of more than one country nowadays. You know, the world has changed. Do you think that I know Portugal, as we say in Portuguese, Portugal está na moda. It's kind of an in thing now to go to Portugal for vacation. But tourism has its ups and downs.
Yes, it is, but it is changing. For example, Algarve was dominated at the beginning years ago by the Germans and then the British. Now with this Brexit, they may put a little temper on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know it already has,
mm-hmm.
but there is another wave now from France,
mm-hmm.
especially I'm talking about the continental Portugal. That's what you asked me.
Right.
In southern Portugal, in particular, Algarve is the place that is the Hawaii of Portugal, of Europe, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of French coming, but they're not coming for tourism.
Mm.
They're coming to stay.
Mm.
They're coming to get away from the problems in France. You see, what we see on TV, this yellow jacket movement, the crime, and all of the problems that France have, they want to go and they're buying houses, not by the beach, but in the mountains, in small villages, in areas that are not considered quote unquote a tourist area. They just want a place to live in peace and calm. So, Portugal, fortunately, has that reputation of being a safe place,
mm-hmm.
being a place that they walk up to people. They're used to deal with foreigners, if you will, and the French love it now. That was not the case with the French. So that is new.
Yes,
that is new.
Eduardo Eusebio, thank you so much. We're just about out of time. I appreciate the time that you spent with us. I appreciate the time talking, obviously, about the Luz American Education Foundation, but also your insights on Portugal and how things are changing there. It's always good for people to have a direct contact. Many of our listeners are second, third, and even fourth generation, and many of them have never gone to Portugal. I always tell them, go to the Azores, but also do go to mainland Portugal to see the history and the Algarve and, as you mentioned, the Hawaii of Europe. So thank you again for taking time. Thank you for all you do for the Portuguese American community, all you've done throughout the last five decades. And we'll keep on working on behalf of our community here in California. Again, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Can I say just one more thing? And that is my wife's place of preference for vacation is the Azores, okay?
That's why I like her. Okay, I knew there was something about her. Okay. Thank you so much, Eduardo.
With relatives and friends of any of that. All right.
That's right. Thank you, and Happy New Year. Thank you so much. Um abraço. Thank you. That was Eduardo Eusebio, president, chairman of the board, I should say, of the Luso American Education Foundation, an organization that's done wonderful things in the Portuguese American community throughout the state. Founded in the 1950s, as he mentioned, and throughout its time has given way over $2 million in scholarships to students. Most of the scholarships, as he mentioned, are around $500, but there are scholarships of $1,000, $1,500, even $4,000. So those of you who have students who are high school seniors, please do have them when it comes to now. I think it's by the end of March, and we'll have that information. Please do have them apply for the Luso American Education Foundation scholarships.
Yeah.
And I think we're almost out of time. This was a full program, Justice.
Yeah.
With two guests, okay? Yeah. And we went to different parts of the world, to mainland Portugal, all the way to Macau in China. So it's kind of a an indication of how indeed the Portuguese have been all over the world with the era of the discoveries that we've talked about.
Definitely.
So we thank you all for being here. Thank you, Justice, once again. Thank you, Esmeralda, for all your work back there in silence. She's in silence, but she's here. We do have a third person here. And for making us all sound great and for doing all the things that do make the show work. Thanks to all of you for tuning in, and please consider continuing listening to the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural Radio 1600 AM KGST. We also will be talking about more events of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, but we would like you for sure to put February 20th on your list. We have a lecture and we have a celebration with a dinner celebrating the first year of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. I think we're just about out of time, Justice.
Yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up for us for our daily dose.
That's right. Every day, 4 to 5. Don't forget, tell your family and friends. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the Portuguese American Hour.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.